Welcome to the Call to True Beauty, where we will help you build healthy, violence-free relationships. The Call to True Beauty is a production of WCLK, Verizon Wireless, and the Partnership Against Domestic Violence. For the next hour, we'll examine important issues and discuss ways to empower you or your loved ones troubled by these issues. We'll also take your calls and hear your stories. Here's your host for the Call to True Beauty, former judge and president and CEO of the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, Daphne Walker.
Good evening. You're listening to the Call to True Beauty on WCLK. The Call to True Beauty is made possible by Verizon Wireless, the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and Clark Atlanta University. Remember, this is a call-in show where you have the opportunity to call in and talk with us about healthy relationships and domestic violence issues. If you would like to join our conversation tonight, you can call us at 404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. Our guests tonight on the Call to True Beauty are Lieutenant Janet Brady with the Atlanta Police Department Special Victims Unit and Louis Negron. He is a domestic violence advocate and also a doctoral student in the School of Education here at Clark Atlanta University. Welcome, Lieutenant Brady and Louis. Great to see you.
Great to see you. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, we're here to talk tonight on the issue of domestic violence and the law. And we're definitely glad to have Lieutenant Janet Brady with us with the Atlanta Police Department and their Special Victims Unit. Lieutenant Brady, why don't you give our listeners just kind of an overview on what types of cases you handle in that Special Victims Unit?
The Special Victims Unit, we handle several different types of cases. One of my subunits is crimes against children. Also, child exploitation, where we handle sexual molestation of children. We also handle all of the domestic violence cases that have that are either aggravated assaults or have visible injuries. And we also handle adult sex crimes.
Okay. And how many people do you have in your unit?
I have myself. I'm the unit commander. And then we have five sergeants. And I also have 23 investigators.
And how long has the Special Victims Unit been active here in the city of Atlanta?
The Special Victims Unit has been active for a long time, going back to probably the 1970s. But the Domestic Violence Unit is a new unit that was started in 2012 by Chief Turner. And I was pretty much there from the start of the Domestic Violence Unit. And we have eight investigators assigned to the Domestic Violence Unit and a sergeant assigned to the unit as well. And they work 8 a.m. until midnight every day, 7 days a week.
And so why do you think it was important for Chief Turner and the Atlanta Police Department to develop that domestic violence unit?
I think it was really important to develop the unit just to make sure that this type of cases, these violence against mostly women, most of our victims are women, and just to make sure that these cases are followed up on appropriately and that we do all that we can to arrest the suspects of these types of crimes and prosecute them.
Are there any special procedures that you all use for domestic violence cases that you might not use in some other cases to make sure those cases are fully investigated?
What we focus on is evidence-based prosecution. We try to obtain as much evidence as possible as we respond to the scene. We get statements from the victims and witnesses. We'll pull the 911 tapes. We'll get photographs of the victim, of the scene. And all of that combined helps us to make a stronger case when we take it to court for prosecution.
Louis, you are a domestic violence advocate, and you also do work in the area of domestic violence to help people who are non-English speaking. Is that right?
That is right.
Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing with the non-English speaking community.
Yes, actually, my business partner and I, we own Lux & Associates, Eddie Valentin. He is also a doctoral student in the School of Social Work here. And a couple of years ago, we came together because during our work in the community, we found that undocumented women in the metro area, especially in the Latino community, were not reporting domestic violence, were not making the calls in. And how I came to find that out was when I was working and tutoring a lot of the children. And hearing the stories and understanding what's happening. And then Eddie, being a licensed social worker, was doing a lot of the clinical cycle work with them. And we decided that this was something that needed to be a voice lended to, especially when you have someone who is in that situation, being undocumented, that they generally do not want to call the police and report because they're afraid that they may be deported, things of that nature. And that led us to do work with the U visa.
And so what type of work are you all doing with the U visa?
Currently, what we do is anybody who is in that situation, we work out of Savannah and also here in the metro area where we do the interviewing with them. We do the background checks with them. We help them follow up with the police reports and whatever jurisdiction they're in. And with that, we counsel them to make sure that they have and they know their rights. And when we work with immigration attorneys, we're able to go forward and help them present a better case and clear case from both a clinical side and an educational side as advocates for the individuals within the situation.
Let's talk about, just in case we have some listeners that are not aware of what U visas are. Can you explain that process? I know there's the issue of if someone is a victim of domestic violence here in the United States, but they're not in the country legally.
Yes.
That they do have the opportunity to apply for a U visa to get asylum and to be allowed to remain in the United States if they can show that they're a victim of domestic violence.
That is correct.
And so when we talk about this U visa process, is it really important for someone who has been brought to this country possibly as a domestic violence victim to be able to apply for that U visa process?
It is important because then it would allow them and the children the rights to be able to get the services they need here locally and to be able to help them through their situation, through the counseling and the services that are available. And also it's important that they'll then be able to get a safe shelter and things of those natures to be able to be protected.
You are listening to the Call to True Beauty on WCLK, and this has been made possible by Verizon Wireless, the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and Clark Atlanta University. Our guests tonight on the Call to True Beauty are Lieutenant Janet Brady with the Atlanta Police Department Special Victims Unit and Louis Negron with Lux & Associates, who's also a domestic violence advocate working with the non-English speaking community. Give us a call at 404-880-9255. 404-880-9255. They are here to answer your questions related to domestic violence in the law and also the integration, if you will, of how we are able to respond to people who are non-English speaking who may wish to report domestic violence. And Lieutenant Brady, that actually leads me to my next question. And that is, when you are investigating these cases, do you all often find it difficult or sometimes challenging to work with individuals who are non-English speaking and who might be hesitant to report?
We do have some victims that I believe are hesitant to report because they're non-English speaking, that maybe they're not non-documented, but we offer them the same services, the same type of follow-up that we would to anyone. So we encourage people to come forward and report domestic violence. We will get them the help they need. We have a representative in our department that works on obtaining U visas for victims of crimes. So we encourage them to come forward. We also have a Hispanic liaison that we call to translate if we need translation services. And then the department actively recruits Spanish-speaking officers to help with translation as well. So we definitely encourage them to come forward and that we will provide any help that they need.
If the language is not Spanish, are there resources available for someone who may speak Mandarin Chinese or Russian?
Yes, we do have a translation line that we can call and translation services that we can access. So we encourage anyone to come forward.
So it does not matter what the language barrier is. The police department is willing to work with that individual to make sure that they can report.
Absolutely.
What do you see as the most reported crimes, Lieutenant Brady, when we talk about domestic violence in the city of Atlanta?
We see a lot of batteries. We see a lot of strangulations. We see a lot of aggravated assaults. We see any gamut of crime. Where weapons are used, where physical force is used. It pretty much runs the spectrum of all different types of crime, physical abuse cases mostly.
And when you talk about batteries, basically when we say there's a battery, it's someone who has some type of visible injury as a result of someone hitting them, punching them, biting them. But it requires some type of visible injury, is that right?
For our unit to investigate it, it requires a visible injury, but if there is no visible injury, we still have investigators that work the different zones in the city that will investigate the crimes where there is no visible injury.
And so if there is a victim that calls in to the police department, what is that process like for them? What should they expect? I know that I've been beaten up by my boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife or partner, if it is a same-sex relationship, and I want to call the police to report that because I know that the abuse isn't proper. What would they expect once they make that call to 911? How would the Atlanta Police Department respond?
Once they call 911, the 911 operator will try to get as much information as possible from the person that's calling to report the crime. They will dispatch an officer to the scene as soon as an officer is available. So the victim can expect that an officer will come to the scene and speak with them, and they could expect that they would be interviewed and asked to give probably a verbal statement on the scene. And photographs will be taken of the scene, and any injuries, any witnesses that are at the scene would also be interviewed. And if the officer on the scene may call an investigator to come to the scene and further, you know, speak with everyone, take statements and whatnot. And once we develop probable cause that a crime has been committed and that the person that's the suspect is involved, then we would make the arrest on the scene.
Do you find sometimes that victims are reluctant to respond to police and to make those calls?
Yes, definitely. I think there's a lot of unreported domestic violence because some victims are just, you know, they just want what's going on at the time to stop. And once it stops, you know, they tend to forgive the person, or they're financially dependent on the person, or maybe they've grown up in a cycle of violence and they think it's normal. There's any number of reasons why victims are reluctant to call the police or, you know, don't call the police. But I think it's very important to call the police because we're kind of the first line of defense. We're the first intervention, so to speak, to get the victim the help that they need and to get the suspect the help that they need. The person who's committing the battery or the aggravated assault or the stalking or whatever it may be needs help as well. So we try to help, you know, help those individuals as well through the court system.
Lewis, what do you do to work with victims who might be reluctant? If they're not English speaking, so already have the barrier or sometimes the challenge of language, even being able to communicate what's happened to them, what do you do to try to encourage them to report if they are reluctant?
Well, some of the things that we do is that we keep in contact with them, definitely, via phone, via text. We assure them that we're there to listen, to hear them out. Sometimes they are afraid to speak up, especially when it comes time for, you know, when they hear that they need to speak to a police officer or so forth. But what we do is we're there for encouragement. We're there to have a listening ear because sometimes they don't have that ear. And especially within the language, they need to express that information. But as it goes, we do give them encouragement to let them know these are the services available to you. These are the things that are available to you and your children. And we give them encouragement. And generally, when they're in session with Eddie definitely brings he brings it home to them, more or less is the way to say it, because when he's in therapy with them, he's able to get closer to them and have that conversation with them heart to heart. And generally, like the lieutenant says, sometimes, you know, once they get over that fear and they know that the help is there, that definitely is the key in knowing that we're there with them every step of the way to let them know. And we encourage them, we're here with you. We'll be in this process with you. And sometimes they just need that one person or that group of people to be with them for their support.
I'm Daphne Walker. You're listening to the Call to True Beauty on WCLK. We're here with Lieutenant Janet Brady with the Atlanta Police Department's Special Victims Unit and Lewis Negron with Lux & Associates, who's a domestic violence advocate, also pursuing his degree in the School of Education here at Clark Atlanta University. They're here to take your questions on the issue of domestic violence and the law, looking at the intersection of not only how cases are pursued here in the city of Atlanta, but also looking at how we're able to make sure that people who are non-English speaking are able to access the system and also to report those crimes if they believe they've been victims of crimes to the Atlanta Police Department. Please give us a call at 404-880-9255. 404-880-9255. They're here to take your calls. And we have on the line at this time Shirley in Atlanta. Hi, Shirley. How are you?
Hi. Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
I really appreciate your show, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. I have a question. I feel pretty confident that a close family friend is being abused. And, you know, I've tried to talk to her about it. She really doesn't want to talk about it. I have really two questions. Number one, is it something that I can report, or am I just being a nosy neighbor? Or number two, you know, I think the reason she doesn't want to broach the subject is because, quite frankly, she depends on her husband's income. Is it a certainty that he would go to jail if I report this, or are there other options like counseling maybe?
Let's start, Lieutenant Brady, with the first part of your question. Thank you, Shirley, for calling. And that is, can a family member report the abuse to the Atlanta Police Department if the victim is reluctant to report that abuse?
Definitely. A family member or friend can report abuse. We'll investigate it as thoroughly as we can. Ultimately, we do need the victim's cooperation. So it's, you know, it's sort of a sticky position to be in to report an abuse against another person, because ultimately we do need the victim's cooperation. But if you feel that it's, you know, significant enough and needs to be reported, I would encourage you to report it.
And Lewis, one of the other questions she asked had to do with the fact that, can this person pursue counseling? Are there other options available if the person is reluctant to pursue a prosecution? What if anything, do you have to add to that particular aspect of it?
I definitely would say be a friend. You could definitely ask inquisitive questions of them, to just check in with them. How are you doing today? Are you all right? You know, check on them daily. Things of that nature that may not seem out the ordinary, but at least checking in with them would be a great way to be, at least you be able to monitor the situation. And just, again, be that listening ear, just to, you know, be with them on that perspective.
And one of the things, Shirley, I also want to share with you, it does not depend on income. If, in fact, you want to make a call to the police department, we always tell people, please make the call, because a lot of times what the police department is faced with is that you don't have any real record of this person making any previous calls. And so what may seem like an insignificant call the first time, if it's taken in combination with seven additional reports, makes a very big difference. And so we are glad that Lieutenant Brady has advised that please make the reports, but also recognizing that it can affect any socioeconomic background. And I think there's a myth out there that only people from a low socioeconomic background will be victims of domestic violence or crime. And what we do know, and I don't know if you can add to this, Lieutenant Brady, is that they come from all walks of life. I mean, I remember when I first came to the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, I saw a Jaguar with a drive-out tag on it, and I also saw a Honda that probably was a 1988 model. But it gave me a good visual and perception of the fact that this can affect anybody, regardless of their economic background. But it just can be someone who is in a poor relationship where someone is trying to exercise control. Has that been your experience, Lieutenant Brady?
Definitely. That's been my experience as well. We see victims from, you know, all economic and backgrounds, and just a lot of different types of victims.
Thanks for your call, Shirley. We now have on the line Lisa in Atlanta. Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for calling us. What's your question for Lieutenant Brady or Lewis Negron?
Well, my question is, what happens when you have a person that's in a relationship and they keep calling the police, and the police department in that area, I don't know if they're tired of the calls, or I don't know, they're just angry with the person because they're not pursuing the calls. But what do you do in this situation when you have a family member that the police department does nothing when they call the police?
Lieutenant Brady, you want to speak on that?
I just don't think that we do nothing. I just, that's just not how we operate. I mean, if the police get called, we go to the call, and, you know, if there's an allegation of abuse, we take a report, and then normally a detective will follow up on the report. And what I would suggest, if you feel like the police aren't following up, to give us a call back and find out what's going on with your, you know, with your report.
And Lieutenant Brady, let me ask you this: a requirement that if someone responds to a domestic violence situation, especially a police officer, that they are required to complete a family violence report?
That's correct. They are required to complete a report if it's in fact family violence. There is a requirement by Georgia state law that a report be completed.
And when we talk about family violence, those relationships have to be established, whether they're living together, formerly married, currently married, currently or formerly cohabitating in some form. But as long as that domestic violence relationship is there and you all can determine that a crime has occurred, those reports do have to be filed.
That's correct. It's a little different for dating violence. If the subjects don't live together, there's no legal requirement. But if there is a domestic violence relationship, say step-parents or step-children, parents, children, people living in the same household or formerly married, then we are required by law to take the report and to follow up.
And Lisa, I definitely appreciate your call, because a lot of times people feel like if they call the police, they don't get a response. But that's also the reason that we're having the show tonight and bringing you Lieutenant Brady as well as Louis Negron to talk about the fact that there is a specialized unit, you know, that focuses only on special victims' crimes and specifically in the area of domestic violence. And that was something that Chief Turner and the Atlanta Police Department take very seriously. And as a result of that, they're trying to pursue those cases. So we definitely appreciate your call, because it gives us the opportunity to talk more about the resources that are available with the Atlanta Police Department and also what they're doing to address the issue of domestic violence. Lieutenant Brady.
I was just going to say, there are some times when family members seem to think that the police may not be doing what we need to be doing. But a lot of times the victims themselves, for some reason, they decide to change their mind and don't want to prosecute and don't want to follow through with a prosecution. So sometimes, you know, it's out of our hands and we've done all we can, but there's no prosecution because sometimes the victim has changed their mind, which is, you know, that's one of the obstacles that we face. And that's one of the obstacles that we're trying to help overcome.
And thank you so much for your call, Lisa. We now have a call from Eric in Kennesaw. Eric, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm actually doing all right today. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Sure. Thank you for calling the Call to True Beauty. And what is your question?
My question is, you know, when a person has actually been convicted, charged and convicted with domestic violence, and a lot of times you hear about this person going back and actually, even with a restraining order, you know, still harassing or doing harm or even killing that person. I wanted to know, is there any type of monitoring or tracking that person could be under that would prevent this person from, you know, being able to go back and to bother this person, even after they've been convicted?
Did you want to speak on that, Lieutenant Brady?
Well, if there's a protective order or a bond order where the person is not to have any contact, then when there is contact, we sort of have to depend on the victim to let us know that there's been contact. And at that point, we can step it up and get stalking warrants, or it may rise to the level of aggravated stalking. Sometimes I'm not sure. I've never really heard of a judge ordering like an actual tracking of a suspect, but I would imagine that would be possible too.
Okay. Okay, great.
And what I will tell you, Eric, usually if the defendant is convicted of a crime involving domestic violence, there are federal laws that indicate that they're not supposed to possess firearms as long as the prosecutor has done all of the steps that are necessary in the plea process or either the conviction process to make sure that those federal guidelines kick in. And so they're not supposed to have firearms, right. But sometimes, obviously, they do. But what we all often tell people is they are called protective orders in Georgia, not restraining orders. But what the protective order does do is put you in a position where you can call the police, and it gives the police at least the first foundation to say, look, this person's not supposed to have contact with me. But what we talk about at the Partnership Against Domestic Violence is we also still want to do safety planning. And that is because the police can't be everywhere. The judge can't be everywhere. Lewis can't be there translating, you know, necessarily all of the time to make sure certain things don't happen. But what we also want to do in combination with that protective order is safety planning, where we say, you know, you may not want to live in the same place, and we may help them relocate. We may talk to them about changing their cell phone numbers, making sure that they don't have tracking devices on their phones, you know, things like that can put them in a position of being safer. because even though we may try our best efforts, sometimes the protective order in and of itself does not provide the protection. We still have to have a situation where a person is still making really good safety planning choices when it comes to getting that protective order. Right. So did you have another question, or was that it?
No, that was, you know, that was just basically a general question that I had, and I was wondering, you know, if that was at all possible. And of course, you know, you explained it. So I just wanted to know if that was out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call, Eric. You're listening to The Call to True Beauty on WCLK, and we're here with Lieutenant Janet Brady with the Atlanta Police Department, Special Victims Unit, and Louis Negron from Lux & Associates talking about domestic violence in the law. And we will be back in a moment.